One, yeah, it does. VOA One, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, I report on China's alleged secret overseas police stations. Dan Friedel has a story on a small parasite killing sea urchins in the Caribbean. John Russell reports on an indoor growing plan for a beer ingredient in Spain. Faith Perlow answers a question about soccer and football, and we listen to a story by O. Henry called After 20 Years. But first, police in New York have arrested two men for allegedly setting up a secret police station for a Chinese police agency. The goal was reportedly to collect information on opponents of the ruling Communist Party. Such offices have been reported across North America, Europe, and in other countries with critics of the Communist Party who have family or business contacts in China. China denies that they are police stations. It says they exist mainly to provide citizen services, such as providing driver's licenses. Xi Jinping is the Communist Party leader and China's head of state. His campaign against corruption has targeted criticism of his leadership, both in China and overseas. The arrests Monday in New York came alongside charges against 34 officers with China's National Police Force in China. They are accused of using social media to target party critics in the United States, officials said Monday. Here is a look at the accusations that China is running secret overseas police stations. The two men who were arrested were acting under the direction and control of a Chinese government official, the Justice Department said in a statement Monday. The men were identified as Harry Liu Jianwang, 61, and Chen Jinping, 59, both U.S. citizens from New York City. The arrests are the first of their kind anywhere in the world. The two did not register with the Justice Department as agents of a foreign government, U.S. law enforcement officials said. U.S. officials said the office did perform some services, like helping Chinese citizens renew their Chinese driver's licenses. But they said it also helped the Chinese government find a pro-democracy activist of Chinese descent living in California. The office also threatened a fugitive who police wanted to return to China, officials said. Wang Wenbin is China's foreign ministry spokesperson. He said there was no such thing as an overseas police station. He accused the U.S. of political manipulation. The foreign ministry said it operates the centers to help citizens with things like renewing driver's licenses. Safeguard Defenders is a Spain-based non-government group. In a report published last year, the group accused Chinese police of using such centers to spy on critics overseas and to bother or threaten both citizens and non-citizens. U.S. law enforcement officials said the station in New York was operated by the Fuzhou office of China's Ministry of Public Security. They wrote that it had no power to operate in New York and that it violated U.S. law and national sovereignty. China-U.S. political relations are at a historic low. In February, the U.S. canceled a visit by Secretary of State Antony Blinken because of a Chinese spy balloon that was discovered over the United States. The accusations of illegal Chinese police stations will likely bring more bad feelings towards China and Chinese businesses such as Huawei and TikTok. It is not clear if China will seek the release of the two men arrested in the U.S. Both men are U.S. citizens. China has, in the past, been accused of so-called hostage diplomacy. It previously imprisoned two Canadian citizens over the arrest of a top executive of Chinese electronics giant Huawei. In a February 2002 news release, the government of Fujian province said it had created the first 30 Fuzhou police overseas service stations on five continents. Safeguard Defenders estimates that there are now more than 100 such offices around the world, from Canada to New Zealand. Some are based in embassies, while others have operated out of business centers that are popular among people of Chinese descent.
Scientists say a small parasite is the cause of death of many sea urchins in the Caribbean Sea. Sea urchins are simple animals that have long spines. Last year, the long-spined sea urchins, also known as Diadema antilarum, started getting sick. They were losing their spines, and their sticky feet were losing their grip on the coral reefs. The loss of so many sea urchins, which eat algae that grow on the corals, affected the undersea environment from the Virgin Islands to Puerto Rico to Florida. Maya Breitbart led a team of scientists who investigated the sickness. She is a marine microbiologist at the University of South Florida. The team presented their study recently in the scientific publication, Science Advances. "The case is closed," Breitbart said. The scientists compared the sick urchins to healthy ones and determined a single-celled parasite was to blame. Ian Hewson is a marine disease researcher at Cornell University in the state of New York. He said the team ruled out bacteria or viruses, but the team did see single-celled organisms called ciliates in the sick urchins. The scientists then put a group of healthy sea urchins grown in a laboratory in a tank with some of the parasites. 6 of the 10 urchins in the tank later died. The scientists are now working to find a way to prevent future losses. They do not have a treatment for the sea urchins, but they are hoping to learn how the parasites spread so they can stop them. Breitbart noted another time that many sea urchins died in the 1980s. She did not know if the same parasites caused that problem. Don Levitan is a marine scientist at Florida State University, who was not involved in the study. He said, the two urchin die-offs, or widespread losses of the animals, have changed the coral reefs in the Caribbean Sea. He said, at one time, they were covered with spiny urchins, but now they are covered in algae, sick from disease, and stressed by rising water temperatures. Coral reefs in the Caribbean are in trouble, he said. We are at a different place than we were 30, 40 years ago. I'm Dan Friedel.
Large buildings outside Madrid, Spain's capital, hop vines grow under special lights and close supervision. A small company believes growing the vines will be important to ensuring a supply of an ingredient in beer, the world's most popular alcoholic drink. Hops are traditionally grown in areas like Bavaria, Germany, the Czech Republic, or the northwestern United States. That is because the plants need a climate that has long summer days and mild temperatures. However, research shows environmental changes are driving down yields and quality of hops. It is a growing problem for the beer industry. Industry groups say U.S. production was down 12% in 2022, while German production decreased by 21%. Czech yields fell by more than 40% because of unusually hot weather. Spain's Ekonoki is a kind of small business known as a startup. Ekonoki is growing hop vines indoors to solve the problem. The company uses nearly 95% less water than traditional outdoor farming systems. We're on a mission to save the world's beer, Ines Serrario, co-founder of Ekonoki, told the Reuters news agency. The startup's 11-member team of scientists experiments with different groupings of light and fertilizer and water mixtures. The goal is to increase production of substances such as alpha acids and essential oils. These give hops the bitter and fruity smells that are enjoyed by beer lovers. A large number of sensors are attached to the vines to measure water and carbon dioxide levels. Special LED lights change colors in the growing area. These hops have never seen any sunlight, only our own light show, said Javier Ramiro, a scientist with Ekonoki. To finance its research and growth plans, Ekonoki is working with the Hijos de Rivera group, makers of the popular Estrella Galicia beer. The growers said the next step is to increase production to three rooms of up to 400 plants each. Serrario said that in the future, indoor growing areas could be set up near beer makers. These growing areas could reuse the carbon dioxide released during fermentation. The company is part of Anheuser-Busch InBev's, ABI, 100-plus Sustainability Accelerator Program. This program aims to give financing to companies that offer improvements in environmental and social problems. ABI's Willy Buholzer called the business very promising. but he said it remains to be seen if it can grow and sell hops that are able to compete with traditional producers. You should not underestimate traditional outdoor hop growers. They always come up with new ideas, he added. The most obvious difficulty indoor farming faces, he said, is its high energy cost. But Buholzer believes high energy prices will return to normal. He added that special varieties and more harvests could make indoor farming competitive in pricing. You can't make beer without hops, and they don't want to produce less, Serrario said. Ekinoki's plan, she added, is to set up indoor growing areas around the world. This can be grown anywhere, Madrid, Sevastopol, or Timbuktu. I'm John Russell.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about the difference between football and soccer. Hello, my name is Ben. I am a middle school student from China. I like learning English. Soccer and football sometimes mean the same thing, and sometimes they mean different things. Could you please explain how to tell the difference in daily life? Thank you, Ben. This is an awesome question, Ben. You are correct. Football and soccer are the same sports. But football in the United States is a completely different game from the football played in other parts of the world. Let's take a closer look at those two terms and two different games played. The most popular game in the world, football, is the one played only with the feet. Every 4 years, players from many nations gather for the World Cup. In gameplay, a ball is passed and kicked around a large field with goals at each end. A goalkeeper protects each goal, while 10 other players try to score. Football is played almost year-round, with two short breaks in the winter and summer. The Argentina national football team won the 2022 World Cup. We also play this game in the United States, but we call it soccer. It is the same sport. 11 U.S. cities will host soccer games for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. One of the most popular sports in the United States, however, is called football, but it is a completely different sport. Most people from outside of the U.S. know the sport as American football, and the big game each year is called the Super Bowl. In this sport, the ball is oval-shaped and brown. The players mostly use their hands as they run and throw the ball down the field to the other team's end zone to score points, known as touchdowns. Players can also kick the ball over a high bar to score extra points. As with soccer, there are 11 players on each team, but no goalkeepers. Instead, defensive players try to stop the other team from scoring by knocking the ball away or knocking down the player with the ball. American football is played September through January. Unlike soccer, there are no professional football teams with women. The West Virginia Mountaineers have won a lot of football games, but they have never won a national college championship. Tailgating parties before football games include music, food, and drinks. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you, Ben. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Hi, Faith. Nice story about the difference between soccer and football.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be back.
I've never thought about why here in the U.S. we use the word soccer for the sport you play with your feet, but in Britain they use the word football. So I did some research of my own to find out.
What did you learn?
A 2014 research paper from a University of Michigan sports economics professor argues that soccer was actually first used in the 1800s in England. When football and rugby were first getting popular, people used the same word to describe them both, football, but they had different rules.
Sounds confusing.
Exactly. So, in 1863, the Football Association was formed to write the rules for football, and a rugby association was formed to write the rules for rugby. The two sports officially became known as rugby football and association football, but later they shortened the two terms to rugger and soccer. Soccer is sort of a shortened form of the word association. It was apparently the style in England at the time to add an ER to the end of a lot of words.
Interesting. So the word soccer came here from England?
Yes. In the US, people started using soccer to differentiate it from our American version of football.
And I've heard British people complain that we don't use football and instead say soccer.
Yeah, it's pretty unfair since it was originally a British word. But don't tell any Americans, I actually prefer football to soccer.
I won't, Dan. See you next week. Am I still the teacher on the show?
Don't worry, Faith, you'll always be the teacher. Thanks for coming on today.
After 20 years, the cop moved along the street looking strong and important. This was the way he always moved. He was not thinking of how he looked. There were few people on the street to see him. It was only about 10 at night, but it was cold, and there was a wind with a little rain in it. He stopped at doors as he walked along, trying each door to be sure that it was closed for the night. Now and then he turned and looked up and down the street. He was a fine-looking cop, watchful, guarding the peace. People in this part of the city went home early. Now and then you might see the lights of a shop or a small restaurant, but most of the doors belonged to business places that had been closed hours ago. Then the cop suddenly slowed his walk. Near the door of a darkened shop, a man was standing. As the cop walked toward him, the man spoke quickly. "It's all right, officer," he said. "I'm waiting for a friend. 20 years ago, we agreed to meet here tonight. It sounds strange to you, doesn't it? I'll explain if you want to be sure that everything's all right. About 20 years ago, there was a restaurant here where this shop stands, Big Joe Brady's Restaurant. It was here until 5 years ago," said the cop. The man near the door had a colorless, square face with bright eyes and a little white mark near his right eye. He had a large jewel in his necktie. 20 years ago tonight," said the man, "I had dinner here with Jimmy Wells. He was my best friend and the best fellow in the world. He and I grew up together here in New York, like two brothers. I was 18 and Jimmy was 20. The next morning, I was to start for the West. I was going to find a job and make a great success. You couldn't have pulled Jimmy out of New York. He thought it was the only place on earth. We agreed that night that we would meet here again in 20 years. We thought that in 20 years we would know what kind of men we were and what future waited for us. It sounds interesting, said the cop. A long time between meetings, it seems to me. Have you heard from your friends since you went west? Yes, for a time we did write to each other, said the man. But after a year or two, we stopped. The West is big. I moved around everywhere, and I move quickly. But I know that Jimmy will meet me here if he can. He was as true as any man in the world. He'll never forget. I came 1,000 miles to stand here tonight. But I'll be glad about that if my old friend comes, too. The man waiting took out a fine watch covered with small jewels. 3 minutes before 10, he said. It was 10 that night when we said goodbye here at the restaurant door. You were successful in the West, weren't you? Asked the cop. I surely was. I hope Jimmy has done half as well. He was a slow mover. I've had to fight for my success. In New York, a man doesn't change much. In the West, you learn how to fight for what you get. The cop took a step or two. I'll go on my way, he said. I hope your friend comes all right. If he isn't here at 10, are you going to leave? I am not, said the other. I'll wait half an hour at least. If Jimmy is alive on this earth, he'll be here by that time. Good night, officer. Good night, said the cop and walked away, trying doors as he went. There was now a cold rain falling and the wind was stronger. The few people walking along that street were hurrying, trying to keep warm. At the door of the shop stood the man who had come 1,000 miles to meet a friend. Such a meeting could not be certain, but he waited. About 20 minutes he waited, and then a tall man in a long coat came hurrying across the street. He went directly to the waiting man.
"Is that you, Bob?"
he asked doubtfully.
"Is that you, Jimmy Wells?" cried the man at the door.
The new man took the other man's hand in his.
"It's Bob! It surely is! I was certain I would find you here if you were still alive. 20 years is a long time. The old restaurant is gone, Bob. I wish it were here, so that we could have another dinner in it. Has the West been good to you?"
"They gave me everything I asked for. You've changed, Jimmy. I never thought you were so tall."
"Oh, I grew a little after I was 20.
Are you doing well in New York, Jimmy?"
"Well enough. I work for the city. Come on, Bob. We'll go to a place I know and have a good long talk about old times."
The two men started along the street arm in arm. The man from the West was beginning to tell the story of his life. The other, with his coat up to his ears, listened with interest. At the corner stood a shop, bright with electric lights. When they came near, each turned to look at the other's face. The man from the West stopped suddenly and pulled his arm away.
"You're not Jimmy Wells," he said. 20 years is a long time, but not long enough to change the shape of a man's nose." "It sometimes changes a good man into a bad one," said the tall man. "You've been under arrest for 10 minutes, Bob. Chicago cops thought you might be coming to New York. They told us to watch for you. Are you coming with me quietly?" "That's wise. But first, here's something I was asked to give you. You may read it here at the window. It's from a cop named Wells."
The man from the West opened the little piece of paper. His hand began to shake a little as he read.
"Bob, I was at the place on time. I saw the face of the man wanted by Chicago cops. I didn't want to arrest you myself. So I went and got another cop and sent him to do the job. Jimmy."
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.